Attention, attention all personnel. It's MASHcast.
Hello and welcome to MASHcast, the show that analyzes and celebrates episode by episode the greatest TV series of all time, MASH, which aired on CBS from 1972 to 1983. Proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network, I'm your host, General Robert Iron Guts Kelly, and joining us this week in the VIP 10 is returning VIP, Major Paul Wildenberger. Hi, Paul.
Glad to be here.
I'm glad to have you back for season three.
Oh, it's great.
So you've already been on the show, of course, as I said, returning. So we're going to jump right into the episode, which is, again, of course, season three, episode 20, Love and Marriage. Original air date, February 18th, 1975, written by Arthur Julian and directed by Lee Phillips. So during surgery, Frank snaps at the medic, Mr. Kwong, played by Soon-Taek Oh, adding some racial insults in the process. Hawkeye and Trapper set him straight, which of course causes an argument. They try and console Mr. Kwong, and Frank gets mad again when he perceives that Hawkeye and Trapper save all their compliments for them and not for a clean-cut boy like Mick Shane, Dennis Dugan, another medic. Hawkeye and Trapper have Mr. Kwong in the swamp for a beer to cheer him up, but it's more than Frank's insults that are bringing him down. He was grabbed by some South Korean military officers and forcibly enlisted. He hasn't seen his pregnant wife in weeks, and he is miserable. Hawkeye and Trapper promise to see what they can do. Meanwhile, the doctors are asked to perform medical checkups for enlisted men who wish to marry Korean locals. They are shocked to see that one of the prospective grooms is McShane, who wants to marry a Korean woman who they know is hardly the barely 18 innocent young girl McShane claims her to be. They initially try and talk him out of it, but he gets angry and refuses. They finally settle on a compromise and get him to wait just for 2 weeks. During a poker game, some of the enlisted men, like Sergeant Zale, tell Hawkeye and Trapper to back off and mind their own business. So what if McShane is being taken in by a professional? Beats being lonely. Meanwhile, Frank accosts Mr. Kwong and trying to leave camp. He has a pass signed unknowingly by Henry via radar, but Frank doesn't care. Mr. Kwong takes off, prompting Frank to fire a warning shot after him. Later, Hawkeye and Trapper are visited by the so dapper he's sleazy Dr. Pack, played by Jerry Fujikawa, who tells them that if they approve McShane's marriage certificate, there's money in it for them. The plan is the bride gets sent to America where she works as a prostitute. She then sends the money back over to Dr. Pack, who was willing to cut Hawkeye and Trapper in on the deal. Pack then mentions that the money would have been more, but McShane insisted on a big cut for himself. Hawkeye and Trapper, disgusted at both Pack and McShane, offer to give Dr. Pack an interesting medical case, setting two broken legs, both of them his own. Later, Mr. Kwong is picked up by the MPs and returned to the 477. Hawkeye and Trapper get him out of trouble with Henry, but he still won't allow Kwong to leave the camp to go after his pregnant wife. Hawkeye offers to go with radar to get Mrs. Kwong and bring her back to the 477. They pick her up, but of course, on the way, Mrs. Kwong goes into labor. Hawkeye delivers the baby with screaming, panicked assistance from radar. Back at the camp, Trapper has McShane into the swamp for a drink. Trapper tells McShane they know the score, but at first McShane plays dumb. Finally, he relents and admits to wanting to, quote, get in on the gravy. Trapper is disgusted, but he doesn't have to worry about the plan going through. An X-ray reveals that the former future Mrs. McShane has tuberculosis, blowing the deal. McShane storms out. Hawkeye and Radar arrive back home with Mrs. Kwong and the baby, named Radar, Benjamin, Franklin, Trapper, John, Henry, Kwong. All right. So as you could all tell by my kind of extra long description in this episode, there's a lot going on. This is a very, very plot heavy episode. So, Paul, what are your thoughts on Love and Marriage?
For the most part, I thought this was a really excellent episode. There's so many parts I like about it. There's a couple things that I think are my favorite scenes in MASH. But like I said before, it's MASH, so I'm going to love it anyway. But
right, all right, absolutely. So like I said, the first thing I wanted to mention is this is the debut of the actor Soon-Taek Oh, who was a longtime character actor. He would go on to be on MASH in, I think, 5 or 6 other episodes, and he always played a different character. Right. He's on the episode The Bus. That's probably one of his more famous ones. He's the titular, the Korean surgeon in season 5. So, I mean, he was a dependable actor. He died in 2018. I didn't know that. I just learned that in the researching for this episode. He had a ton of credits. He was in Missing in Action 2, although we won't hold that against him. Tour of Duty, one of my favorite shows. He was on Trapper John, Charlie's Angels, Hawaii 5-0, Kung Fu, Magnum P.I. Basically, if there was a TV series in the 70s and 80s, Soon-Taek Oh was on it. And he's just terrific here as Mr. Kwong. You could tell he has this kind of like, he's really frustrated. And he wants to sort of tell Frank off, because how could you not want to? But he knows that he has to kind of, you know, keep his place a little bit. And so he's always sort of extra nice to Frank, even though Frank completely doesn't deserve it. And then the other actor that is introduced in this episode is Dennis Dugan, who, again, this is his first of two MASHes. He would later come back in season 11 playing Colonel Potter's oily son-in-law. So for some reason, the producers, when they wanted to cast a real shitheel, they got Dennis Dugan. I don't know what it is they saw about him, but apparently they thought that he was perfect for that. He, of course, had a lot of TV credits in the 70s and 80s. He was famously Richie Brockelman, PI, which was a quasi sort of spinoff of Rockford Files, although Richie Brockelman actually came first. And then apparently they folded the character into some guest spots on Rockford Files. He was on the show The Shadow Chasers, which my guest Dan Budnick talked about when he was here a couple episodes ago. That was the sci-fi show that had the misfortune to be put up against The Cosby Show on CBS. So I think it ran about like 12 episodes and then it was gone. And then he has since moved on to a career as a director. In fact, he has directed a good chunk of Adam Sandler's movies. Again, we won't hold that against him. He's done stuff like I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry, Grown Ups, You Don't Mess with the Zohan. So, I mean, how he ended up being a director of Adam Sandler movies, I don't know. But he's managed to find a whole second career for himself. So, you know, good for him.
Right. And then, Rob, now you left out, I think, his most impressive credit. He was the lead in Unidentified Flying Oddball, Disney classic.
That's right, he was.
I actually watched that again for the first time since I was a child on Disney Plus recently.
Does it hold up?
No. Not at all. I used to have remember the Scholastic Book Fairs?
Oh, sure.
I had the novelization of that book, and I read that cover to cover.
Novelization. Just the idea of someone having to write the novelization. poor Alan Dean Foster. But again, I love the setup here is that, of course, you know, Frank immediately assumes that clean cut boy McShane is worthy of praise simply because McShane is white.
Right.
I mean, and Frank doesn't even really bother to hide it. I mean, he's just like, he's always saying, why you guys always reserving your plaudits for them? So Frank is just, again, well, you know, one of his uglier American bits in this episode, because as we've seen, Mr. Kwong is a character that has appeared in the show before, played by different actors. And sometimes he's been a medical assistant. Sometimes he's been the bartender. But I mean, it's a character that the 477th knows and respects. So obviously he's pretty good at whatever it is they need him to do. But Frank hates him because we know why Frank hates him, because Frank's terrible. Frank's just a terrible person.
He is.
But the scene in after the scene in the OR where they go to the swamp and he talks about how he was quote unquote drafted by basically being grabbed by some South Korean military officials and thrown into a back of a truck. Imagine that. Imagine being tossed. I mean, again, the whole idea is that you're here to fight for democracy, and that doesn't sound like democracy to me.
No. I imagine that actually did happen the way they talk about it, but
yes,
I can't even imagine, you know, being just grabbed, you know, for the good side, as it were.
Right. Pulled away from your pregnant wife in the middle of a war. I mean, for Pete's sakes. I mean, that's just so absolutely terrifying. So, and again, I love that Hawkeye and Trapper try and help him out, where they say, we're going to look into it. And even Hawkeye has the great line about those South Korean kidnapping thing to get 22 recruits of the gallon, which is a nice line. But man, I love they give him a martini and stuff. And again, it's a really, really sweet scene. And Soon-taek Oh just has a really kind of like sweet face when he smiles. He just has looked very, very warm and friendly. And I love him here. I kind of wish that as much as I liked him in the other later episodes, I wish that he had maybe had a chance to play the same character more than once.
Right.
Because it just might have been nice to have that sort of consistency. But, you know, at least they got him to come back numerous times.
Yeah, and I liked him in all, you know, all his various roles from then on. I think my favorite of his is Ralph from
yes.
The
bus. Yeah.
The bus. Yeah.
Great. Yeah. And he doesn't speak at all. He speaks nothing but Korean in that episode. He never even has any line. Right. So, yeah, that's a great set up in the opening. And then you get the B plot where the doctors are going to examine all the soldiers who want to get married to Korean wives. There's this great run with Henry talking to this old woman who needs some teeth. We're giving out no teeth today, no teeth. And then finally just gives him, we're going to get the keys, to the teeth, and get the keys and the teeth, you know, whatever, something like that. And then it said that's when we meet McShane is supposedly getting married to a Korean girl. Now, she's played by Pat Lee is the actress. She plays Sung Hee. She has a bunch of TV credits like I Spy, Marcus Welby, Magnum P.I., Knots Landing and stuff like that. But and now when you watch the – I don't know if you can remember. When you watch the first episode, when you watch this for the first time, like did you think that McShane was – was he, you thought he was, there was something shady about him, or do you think he was genuinely like, didn't know any better, that he was falling, that this girl supposedly was only like 18 years old?
No, I bought it. I thought, you know, I thought Dennis Dugan did a great job, you know, selling him as himself as the clean cut all American boy that they talk about him being.
Right. And, although I do like that he's like, you know, I like that he pushes back on them a little where he's like, you know, I don't need to ask your permission.
Right.
Which is nice because it is. It's like, yeah, I know they're officers and stuff, but I mean, come on. But I like that they're trying to, you know, he says, you know, you bring her home, your mom's going to fall face down into her apple pie and stuff like that.
While it's still in the oven.
While it's still in the oven, yeah. I love all that. That's great. Yeah. And then he says, give it a cooling off period. He's like, I don't want to cool off and stuff like that. Yeah. I mean, it's he has a nice kind of open sort of face to him a little, kind of like Sung Tae-ko in his own way. And yeah, and initially it's, you know, you're kind of like, okay, maybe this kid is just kind of dumb and he doesn't know any better.
Well, they play him off as being so nice and helpful. Just that scene right after the ER where they're all cleaning up. He's, you know, they mention him, but he doesn't really have any lines there. But he's taking off, untying their masks. He's getting the towels for them to dry off. He even hands Frank his scrub brush to scrub his hands. It's just all little bits of business on screen to make him look like he's just a nice, helpful young man.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the following scene is a nice little piece of kind of subtext a little. And then it's the card game with Hawkeye, Trapper, Radar, and Zale. Johnny Hamer making one of his – this would kind of be the beginning of Zale's run where he would end up being in a lot of these episodes. And they do this whole – and Henry's there as well. And it becomes a real officers versus enlisted argument. And Zale starts talking about how, you know, the officers get everything. They get better pay. They get women. They get more leave. They have an easier duty. And even Radar starts chiming in a little bit on that. Even he's kind of like on Zale's side. And then they start talking about that they've heard they're giving McShane grief about getting married. And they're kind of like, it's his business, sir. And I really, it's a nice little piece of like class, I don't want to say class warfare, but it's an angle that you didn't hear as much in earlier seasons. And then you wouldn't hear later on because, of course, Klinger being an enlisted would sort of just be treated like one of the gang.
Oh, yeah.
At a certain point. But I kind of like that they're giving the officers a little bit, even though you're basically on Hawkeye and Trapper's side in this. I like that they're giving them a little bit of pushback that they're like, hey, you got, what are you guys doing? Just because you're officers and you're doctors doesn't mean you know any better about what McShane wants. And that's it's a nice extra thread to throw in that supports the main plot line, which is which is cool.
And they've bought into McShane's facade as well.
Yeah, right. Of course, obviously they don't know that McShane is a scam. So I like all that again, and I like that Radar gets involved in it too. I think it's a nice little bit of Radar. Yeah, he gets privileges because he's the company clerk and he deals almost exclusively with officers.
Right.
But nevertheless, he's probably got a little bit of that too. And so then we have another hideous scene with Frank and Mr. Kwong, where Frank is, you know, questioning him and he says something about the don't talk to me in your pigeon English, which is just God almighty. He fires off a warning shot and that leads to the one of the great act breaks of MASH where Frank comes in with his gun and he's got his gun out for Pete's sakes.
Right.
And they're like, Frank, put that away. And he's like, I know how to use this. And of course he fired it. He fires a gun. He accidentally shoots it off right into the light fixture. And the act break ends with them screaming at Frank, which is, he's waving the gun in their faces like a lunatic.
And I like Larry Linville, evil, has, you know, has that little bit, like right after the light goes out, he looks aside like, what was that?
Yeah, you're right. He's looking around like he doesn't know where it came from. I never even really noticed that before, but that's fantastic. But even in the dark, you could see him kind of like, huh, what? You just fired the gun, you idiot. You got to... By the way, that's a nice effect. Like it really looked the way that they set off the presumably like the explosion in the in the lamp. It really does look like Frank fired the gun. You know he didn't, but it really looks like it. It's very convincing.
They had a little charge in the fixture and they just set it off and It was great.
Yeah, it's really well timed and well orchestrated. And then so we would, after the act break, we come back and then we meet Jerry Fujikawa, who I've mentioned on the show before. He's done a bunch of mashes. He was in the movie Extraordinary Seaman with Alan Alda, which I covered on the Movie Tonight episode a couple of years ago. And he plays Mr. Pack. And I got to say, Mr. Pack in his 50s, or I guess it's probably 40s,
yeah,
suit, he looks like my great uncle Fred if he had been Asian. That's what my uncle Fred looks like. He had that same kind of suit, that same hat, and he had that same slightly longish jet black hair. And he had that same mustache. So if my great uncle Fred, who lived to be 95, had been a Korean, that's what he would look like. He looked like Mr. Pack, Dr. Pack. And I love Jerry Fujikawa in this. He is so funny. He's so oily.
Yes.
And he takes their insults. They keep talking about that he's passing off like a hemorrhoid cream as medicine. And he's like, if you are finished, sirs, like,
yes,
he's just there for the – he is so funny. And I could see why they never would bring him back, but I kind of wish they – had, because I just love him in this Dr. Pack role. He's hysterical.
I thought he was in another episode.
Not the character. Not the character.
No, they did. They make you think the character's been there before. You know, it was like, oh, Dr. Pack. Oh, I'm glad you remember me. It's like,
yes.
Wait.
Yeah.
But I thought that actor had been in other episodes.
The actor, yes, but not the character.
Okay. Oh, the character, right. Yeah, oh, the actor, yes. Okay.
Yeah. Jerry Fujikawa would.
I was going to say,
he's in Deal Me Out. He's the guy, he's Whiplash Wang. He's
yes.
The one that they hit there. And then he comes back in later episodes after this.
Okay.
But he doesn't, Dr. Pack is, this is his one and only.
No, one and only appearance.
Really, I just would have loved Dr. Pack being a every so often recurring character because he just he makes me laugh.
Foil
so hard
for the doctors, yeah.
Yeah, he's just great. So after they chase Dr. Pack, I love again that Hawkeye and Trapper are actually willing to beat Dr. Pack up. It's just great. That's how much they hate him. They're willing to commit. Even Hawkeye's willing to commit violence on Dr. Pack, which is
and that's the part that I was like, wait a minute, would Hawkeye and Trapper actually beat this guy up that they caught him? Then I got to remember, well, just a few episodes earlier, Hawkeye slugged Frank, so
he did.
I guess so.
I don't think they ever really would have hurt. I think they just would have turned him over to the MPs, but
right.
he doesn't know that, so they chase him out of the tent, which is give him a good scare. So then there's the scene in Henry's office where they review that that he has a pass, and he's like, "Well, Henry, you can't charge a guy for desertion." When he has a pass signed by you. And of course that they try and gaslight Henry a little bit where he's like, "What do you, I saw this signed at the poker game." "What poker game?" You know, they're trying to bullshit him and stuff. By the way, just as a detail, desertion and AWOL are two very, very specific things. Right. AWOL is simply you're not present where you're supposed to be. Desertion is the army saying that you have intended to leave your post. So he wouldn't be charged with desertion. He would be charged for being AWOL. Slight difference.
Go see his wife and come back, yeah.
Right, exactly. Desertion, I think, I don't know if that's, I doubt it's still in the books, but for the longest time, like, they could execute you for that.
Oh,
so
my goodness. It's
kind of a big deal to make sure you're not charged for desertion. So then they the plot, such as it is, splits into two. One with Hawkeye and Radar deciding to get on the bus and go find Mrs. Kwong. Again, this is the third episode in the season where the characters go on a long bus ride into dangerous territory.
Yeah.
They went to the aid station, and of course in Rainbow Bridge, they go all the way into China, for Pete's sake. So the bus is getting a lot of use in the third season. And then there's the split sequence with Trapper talking to McShane in the tent. And I am going to say, I think the scene with Trapper and McShane is Trapper John's single finest moment in the three seasons of this show.
Yeah, I have to agree. I hadn't thought about it, but you're right. Yeah.
I just think excellent
scene.
Yeah. I mean, not only is it Trapper's best scene, it's Wayne Rogers' best scene. I think so often Wayne Rogers was, of course, shunted aside in favor of Hawkeye, even plots where the show was about both characters, it would then become about Hawkeye. But here, Trapper, it's just Trapper. And right. I love how much Trapper lures McShane out on that limb You know what I mean? Like he's playing, he's kind of like, all right, let's see if this kid, and then when McShane's like, sir, I don't know any Dr. Pack, and he's really oily, and Trapper does that bit about, you know, he's the doctor with the Parker Brothers diploma, and he's giving McShane a chance to sort of fess up, and he won't. And then I love when Trapper gets so irritated. He says, you know, you call me sir one more time, I'm going to prescribe a 24-hour enema. I love that he's like, okay, I'm willing to you know, let this kid go a little bit, but he's just clearly so dishonest. Now I'm going to turn the tables on him. And that's when McShane crumbles. And it's almost, you can almost see the look on Dennis Dugan's face is how he just becomes real oily at that point. And he has that line about, what's wrong with an enlisted man getting in on the gravy? And you're like,
That's such a great turn. It's so subtle, but it's, he goes from Andy Hardy to just, was it Robert Redford in The Sting?
Right. Yeah. I mean, again, I've said this in a lot of episodes this season, especially in the second half. But to me, it's like if they had given Wayne Rogers more stuff like this to do, I don't think he would have left.
Right.
I really think this is Wayne Rogers just crushes this scene. And it shows that Trapper is a distinct distinct character. He doesn't need to be around Hawkeye to be interesting or to be have a nice contrast with Hawkeye, because Hawkeye would not have probably played this the same way.
Right.
And I just love it. And then I love when the X-ray comes in and he says, you know, your deal is blown. And he's like, what are you talking about? He goes, there's a shadow on the lung of the future, former future Mrs. McShane. And, you know, McShane is like, you're lying. He says, your deal is blown, man. And he goes, I'm sure you'll be able to find love again. And McShane just storms out. And then I love that the camera lingers on Wayne Rogers and Trapper takes a swig of the martini, because it was like he probably didn't enjoy spending time with somebody that unpleasant. But it's such a gangbuster scene.
Yeah.
So, and then we get to the basically the final sequence on the bus where, of course, no TV show, I don't think any TV show has ever passed up the opportunity to do the sudden birth plot.
Yeah.
They've done it on, you know, every show I can think of where there are characters trapped in a strange situation where it's like All in the Family or Star Trek The Next Generation. Oh, look, there's a woman going to give birth in 10 forward. And guess what? Worf's got to deliver the baby. I mean, TV writers cannot resist that trope. Yeah, exactly. So, of course, who's the last person you want helping with a birth?
Right.
And that would be, of course, Radar, who wants nothing to do with this.
Yeah.
And there's a if anybody ever saw the 30th anniversary reunion special they did in the 2000s, they talk about the Burt Metcalf and Larry Gelbart and Gene Reynolds talk about that scene. And apparently during this sequence, Gary Berghoff ad-libbed the line where he says, oh, God, you can see her fuzzy wuzzy, which obviously was never going to make it.
I wonder why that was cut.
Yeah, I wonder why that was
cut.
But obviously, Gary Berghoff was feeling his oats that day and decided to do that. But and Gary Berghoff as Ritter, of course, is hysterical because he can't deal with this notion at all. I mean, the poor woman is screaming, and I like that even Hawkeye says, just come over here and hold her hand, and Raider's like, oh, no, like he knows, not getting involved in it at all. And the actress playing Mrs. Kwong, by the way, is named Jean Jo. She was on shows like Kung Fu Isis, and she has credits as miscellaneous crew member on movies like First Blood and Rambo Part 2. So I don't know what that's about. So, and then of course the bus arrives and the baby is brought on, and Mr. Kwong is excited to see his child, of course. And that's when we find out that Hawkeye says, well, I brought an expert. And then that's Radar being wheeled out on a second stretcher, having also passed out. So it's a great button at the end of the scene. And I will say that this, in the syndication version, this is where my episode ends, is Radar being carted off. And there's a final button scene where we find out that the kid has been named Radar, Benjamin Franklin, Trapper. All that was cut in syndication. So I didn't see that until I got to the DVDs.
All right. Well, I was just going to say that bus scene, I think because it is such a trope, it's probably one of the reasons one of the scenes that I just, it's overdone. maybe I've just watched too many episodes. At the time, it was probably newer. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was probably wasn't as overdone as it became. But you know that, and then Radar just is, he's so over the top. It's funny, but at the same time, it's okay. Take it down just a A notch. Just a notch, and we're good.
Yeah, I mean, again, you have seen it in a million other TV shows. Again, the writers can't resist.
Right, and how long was that bus ride? They said 3 hours, but that baby was at least 3 months old when he got off the bus.
Baby's got a full head of hair and stuff like that. Yeah, well, you know, I mean, would you want to subject your infant to a
TV
being under the hot lights and stuff like that? So yeah,
and that's another trope of TV. They never use an infant for an infant. Yeah, they got to be a few months old.
Yeah, these four month old babies pop out of the pregnant women. I mean, overall, I think this is really one of my favorite episodes of season three. I love that it's got two separate sort of threads, but they are entwined, which I really like. It's plot, B plot. It's love and marriage. And in fact, I even love how the title, of course, which is a famous song sung mostly famously by Frank Sinatra. And of course,
Sinatra.
Yeah.
Sorry, I had to throw. I'm sorry. That's for Ryan.
Crossing over our shows, Sinatra. And of course, it was used as the theme for Married with Children.
Right.
If I don't know if they intended this, but even using that song title hints at the theme in this episode, because of course, Mr. Kwong and his wife have love. Mm-hmm. And it's McShane who just wants the marriage.
Right.
Yeah. He doesn't have any love. He just wants the paper to say that he's married. So you can say, you can have marriage, but it's the love is the important part. And obviously, it's the Kwongs of the couple that you are rooting for, even though it's, you know, McShane is ostensibly, according to Frank Burns' eyes, you know, a clean-cut boy. I really think this is a phenomenal episode. It is writer Arthur Julian's only episode for MASH. I don't know why. I had heard through the grapevine that a lot of these episodes that were written by guest writers that weren't staff writers were heavily rewritten by Larry Gelbart. And maybe this one was heavily rewritten by Larry Gelbart and they didn't like Arthur Julian's final teleplay. And so they never invited him back. But I don't know. I mean, all I know is he's the credited writer for this episode. And I think he's great. Now, he had a lot of TV credits. He died in 1995. He wrote for shows like The Cal Burnett Show, Amen, Give Me a Break, Maude, Doris Day, F Troop. I mean, he had a long TV career dating all the way back to the 50s, like the Red Skelton Hour and stuff like that. So he had a long career and he kept writing into the 80s. And again, we'll never know how much this was Larry Gelbart or somebody else, but if it's Arthur Julian, I think he did a great job because I think this is really one of the best written episodes of the season.
Oh yeah. A lot of great performances in this.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, again, really, really solid themes. And then director wise, this was directed by Lee Phillips, who did some episodes of MASH in the first season. He would come back. I think this is it. I think this is his final show for MASH. He died in 1999. He directed Yankee Doodle Doctor. That was his first episode.
Yeah.
He was rare in that he was an actor and director who managed to do both at the same time. That's unusual. We were talking about Dennis Dugan, who you tend to, like, if you're an actor and you shift into directing, you tend to, you know, not do the first one anymore. But he did both simultaneously. He has directing and acting credits that overlap in the course of the 70s and to the 80s. So, again, I think he did a great job too, because as you said, it features some great performances and great writing, but it's also well directed. So good job, Lee Phillips and Arthur Julian.
Yeah, I noticed they did a lot of close-ups, you know, like single shots, one and two, you know, two shots that I thought, you know, just really helped, especially during the ER scene and then the poker scene.
Mm-hmm.
That really, you know, you got to focus on the one character, you know, and I thought that was. I thought that he did a great job, you know, doing that.
Do you have a particular favorite line or joke from this episode?
It's not a line. It's a bit of action. Henry and Radar have that back and forth about the, you know, it's like, what am I signing? It's top secret. Well, you must know what it is, you know, the back and forth. And so Henry's like, okay, I'll go ahead and sign it. And then he's looking at the woman asking for teeth, and he puts his hand over where he's signing so she can't see him signing it. I thought McLean Stevenson, that was just a perfect little bit of business. Yeah, a little throwaway gag, but I find that hilarious.
I do love that whole run with that lady where she's just she clearly doesn't understand a word of English and she just wants her teeth. And we're going to get the keys and get the teeth. Yeah. It's a great, again, it shows you the kind of stuff like the MASH people have to deal with, you know, and dealing with the locals and stuff like that. So again, and it's very sweet of them too, you know, to do this for these people to go get some fake teeth and give them to this poor lady who doesn't have any teeth, for God's sake. So my favorite line is actually right at the early part of the episode. It's at the opening. It's the scene in the scrub room. And it's where Frank yells at Hawkeye and Trapper for complimenting, you know, Dr. Kwong instead of a clean-cut boy like Machine. And I love the response where Trapper sarcastically goes, "Good job, clean-cut boy." And then Hawkeye adds, "Take two Norman Rockwells out of petty cash." It's just, that I have used that, a variation in that line throughout my life of take two blank out of petty cash. I just feel like that's – It's a all-purpose line. You can just use it forever.
If you're gonna steal from the best. Come on.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, right. I don't mind stealing from MASH. I'll totally cop to that. So yeah. I just love take two Norman Rockwells out of petty cash. That's just wonderful. You know, we don't have famous painters anymore. So that's like not a thing that everybody could reference. But Norman, everyone knew who Norman Rockwell was at the time. Right. So I just love that line. I think it's hysterical. So yeah, I think this is a real late period winner, and it's not one of their like more famous episodes.
Yeah.
You know, it's not one you see mentioned as like a greatest, but I really focused on that scene with Trapper and McShane, which again, I think is Trapper's best moment. And the whole episode is great. I think it's very, very funny. I noticed there's no Margaret in this episode at all.
Right.
She's not, and there's no Father Mulcahy either. And actually there's not, Klinger's not even in this episode either. So yeah, this is a real minimalist episode.
Yeah. You had Kelly in there, but she didn't have any lines. She was just in the background.
Yeah. So I think it's just a really, really terrific episode of the show. So, all right. Well, I think that's going to do it for Love and Marriage. So Paul, I appreciate you coming back and joining me for season 3 to talk about the show.
I was very happy to do it, Rob. Thank you for having me.
All right. Well, thank you. I said we'll have to have you back for the many, many, many more episodes of MASHcast. There are to come. Of course, if you want to follow the show, go to the website, fireandwaterpodcast.com. You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. And we're always talking MASH over on Twitter at MASH477Cast. And then finally, if you want to support the Fire and Water Podcast Network, you can go to patreon.com/FW podcast, and there you can unlock various rewards, one of which is to be name checked on a show of your choice. So big salute to Nicholas Prom, Russell Burbage, Stan Peel, and Dolph DeVries. And for the month of August, Tim Price for their support of MASHcast. So thanks, everybody. So that's going to do it. And until next week, that is all.
Well, I fired a warning, but he just kept running.
Frank, will you put that gun down? It's as offensive a weapon as your mouth.
Okay, scaredy cat. But I can handle a firearm with the best of them.
Ow! Oh, my God! Hey, you really?
Come on!
You get out of here!